Jared, we're one race down in the championship, in the round of eight. One spot locked in out of four. I made a mistake last week. I predicted that Kyle Larson would miss the championship four because I didn't think he was consistent enough. But then I, you know, gave the caveat that, hey, you don't actually have to be consistent. You just have to win. And he did that. He swept both stages, and then he won the race. My like bad.
Brian Newman, 20 years all over again. In 2003, he had a 8-1 season. Was not the champion because of the consistency of Matt Kenseth. Trumped over that. But yeah, I mean, that's all it takes, Daniel. That's all it takes is just one win. He can wreck out at Homestead. He can wreck out at Martinsville, and he'll still be in the championship four. He didn't even have to start those races, really. So that's why I was like, you know,
he might not start them. I don't think he can, like, right? I mean,
and he also had Homestead come up, which, I mean, again, if you saw last year's race, I know you have sentiments towards that last year's race. I think there was a stat where I think the last 50 laps would have gone green. There'd only be one car one lap down, and then everyone else would be two or more laps down. That's how out of the zip code of Kyle Larson is. And it's, again, it seems like it's his championship to lose. And we've seen the momentum the past few years. You just win at Las Vegas. You can prep for Phoenix, relax, don't have the stress of trying to advance. And it seems to do well. It's not translated to other series, but it seems like with the Cup Series, it has happened. But now in the number five car, Kyle Larson can just relax. And I feel like this is one of the closest finishes in the next gen era.
Oh, yeah. It absolutely was. It had to be. Like I said, if Christopher Bell had one more lap, if this had been the South Point 401, I think this is a different story we're talking about. Because Kyle Larson did dominate this race, swept the stages, led 133 of 267 laps, but it doesn't quite feel like that Homestead race. Last year, we were just like, oh, great, here we go. Because Kyle Larson addressed this in his post-race press conference. With the next-gen car, being out front comes at a slight disadvantage because it results in more tire wear, which leads to the second-place car being able to get you and hopefully get by you. Which it almost did on Sunday. We had, you know, multiple leaders. Kyle Larson led 133 laps. You had Christopher Bell, he led 61. Brad Keselowski led 38. Denny Hamlin led 23. So there was some diversity at the front, even though Kyle Larson led away with the lap total. And that did come after an incredible save on Larson's part. Coming out of turn two, where he just fishtailed wildly and briefly touched the outside wall. But a caution came out soon after that helped that team regroup and then go on for the win. So from what you saw of this race, what were your assessments of what it was like in this for this race at Las Vegas for 267 laps?
I think first and foremost, you made mention of one of the drivers, Brad Keselowski. Keselowski, shout out to that team because they were basically up front. It was like Larson and Hamlin and mixing up with Christopher Bell. You didn't really have that at the beginning of the bingo card. So they're now getting to that stage of, okay, we're consistently in the top 10. Yeah. Now we're going to get consistently in the top five and running up front. And eventually, so the number six car is going to end up on the final lap leading a race. Brad Keselowski still has a long winless streak, almost 100 races, but now he's starting to click and make sense where, you know, it's not if, it's when for Keselowski and his team because they're performing well and they picked it up with these, like I said, with the mile and a half package. It's going to be interesting to see how they're going to do. And I mean, yeah, Larson, not like the clear dominance wins that we've seen in the past. But it's a win that, you know, he didn't have a mistake take him out. Obviously, he made mention he hit the wall. He could have easily spun that car, nosed in the wall, and had a day done for him. It was that mistake. You know, sometimes those mistakes really take you out. And that was the big difference right there. If he would have not saved it, Who knows? He could have maybe come back, got tires.
Yeah.
He could have been tired in traffic, couldn't make it through, or he could have wrecked out. So I think he was able to minimize the mistakes as much as he can. And that's why he's sitting here comfortably going to the championship for if Phoenix already locked in.
So, yeah, you mentioned Keselowski. He now has 16 top 10s on the season. That's one shy of his total in his last year with Penske back in 2021. He needs one more to match that. But if it, tire strategy was interesting in this race. There was a lot of pit calls where teams were taking two tires and able to stay competitive up front. And at one point, Martin Truex Jr., who was competitive early on, he actually stayed out on no tires at one point, and then just eventually got swallowed up. So it was much better to take two tires rather than none. But Brad Keselowski, he took like two tires at one point, maybe two times, and he's able to stay up there and compete, which was very impressive, especially, you know, I was tweeting throughout the race. Oh, this is the most laps led by RFK Racing at Las Vegas since, and it's, you know, the Carl Edwards era. That's how long it's been since RFK Racing had a top five at Las Vegas or led a decent amount of laps. So yeah, we keep talking about it. I'm sure RFK Racing would have preferred that it was Chris Buescher doing all the laps led and finishing up at the front rather than Keselowski, but Buescher would have benefited if Keselowski had won. Because if Keselowski wins, that takes away two spots that a playoff driver could get in on wins. So that didn't happen for them, fortunately.
Shout out to Martin Truex Jr. finally getting in the top 10.
Yeah.
Again, as we were mentioned, very streaky. Seems like, I think it was, like I said, the first part of that playoffs, not even in the top 15, now cracks in the top 10. And again, this is why round of eight is where the cream really rises to the top. We'll get into the Ryan Blaney stuff, but
yeah,
all the playoff, eight playoff drivers captured the top 11 spots. Only Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, and Ross Chastain, who were all also in the playoffs,
yeah,
we're in that top 11. So again, this is where cream rises to the top during these last few races. So you know who is actually going to be a championship favorite during these next couple races.
Yeah, no, none of the playoff drivers had awful days. Nothing truly bad happened to them. But Buescher, he's currently the last guy on the playoff grid. Doesn't have any stage points or anything like that, but managed to come home, yeah, with that 11th place finish. So yeah, before we go on, yeah, let's get some audio from both the race winner and the race winning crew chief. First, here's Cliff Daniels, crew chief for Kyle Larson on the number five Chevrolet, giving his assessment of Kyle Larson's save and what kind of grade he gave it.
How many drivers spin like that or have spin like that, kiss the wall, and are able to still keep control of the car and win a race?
Probably not many. Huge credit to him. I got interviewed earlier, and they said, hey, 1 to 10, how would you rate that? Larson safe. So I'm like, man, everybody wants to give it a 10. I'll give it a 9.4. And they're like, 9.4? Well, we hit the wall. I mean, if he wants a 10, don't hit the wall. But it was a ridiculous save. Yeah.
What grade would you give that save, Jared?
I know the Russian judge would give it a 6. It wasn't a pirouette, but it was definitely impressive. You know, one of the topper saves that I've seen, because you're sideways. It was even sideways than some of those cars in the COT era. Remember that, when you could get a car sideways in the COT era and it wouldn't spin out?
Yeah.
So impressive in that year, and the fact that he was able to win the stage after doing that, I think makes it even more impressive.
Yeah, I would give it at least a 7.5. So yeah, but this brings up the question: what exactly is a save? Because I've seen cars spin where they literally the car is pointing in the other direction, the direction it's not supposed to be pointing, and people say, "Oh, what an incredible save!" No, it if your car is pointing the direction you were coming from, that's not a save in my book. But that never happened with Larson.
So you're saying the more important thing is just to spin out and not anything. That's more impressive than, you know, getting loose, hitting the wall, but keeping speed.
Yeah. So
I have it the other way around because, again, I can just turn a left, lock it down, call it a day, and spin it out fine. It's even more hard to control a car, you know, off the corner, still being loose and still being at speed, not having a hospital wobble meaning the fact of this. That's more impressive in keeping up the speed than just locking her down, Daniel. So I think Cliff Daniels is onto something. That it was a pretty high rated save.
I mean, it was impressive. It really was impressive. So moving on, now we got audio from Larson. He's like we've talked about, he's won. He doesn't have to worry about the next two races, but Larson's going to worry about it. He's not worrying about Phoenix. He wants to go out and stink at the show the next two races, which he very much could do at Homestead. So yeah, he could. But here's Larson on his strategy for the next two races, where he says he wants to win by 15 seconds. He wants to win each stage by 15 seconds. Here was what Larson has to say.
Yesterday you came in here and you said you like this track, you like this round. Now you're locked into, you know, the championship. What's your plan? What's your goal? And, you know, do you just trophy hunt for the rest of the?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's nice to win and lock in and you can focus on Phoenix. But at the same point, you can't really look too far ahead of yourself. You know, there's still two other races before then that, you know, I put a lot of pressure on myself going to Homestead. I want to have a great run there, and I want to dominate, honestly. I want to, you know, win both stages by 15 seconds and win the race by 30. So that's my goal. So I'm not thinking really ahead of Homestead yet. And then, you know, Martinsville as well. You know, I want to go there and have another good run like we had earlier this year and go into Phoenix with a lot of confidence and momentum. So, you know, if tomorrow I started worrying about Phoenix and then had two bad runs at Homestead and Martinsville, I think, you know, that would kill our momentum and confidence for Martinsville, or for Phoenix. So just put a lot of pressure on myself and our team to not get complacent and treat every race like it means something.
I don't know about you, Jared. I don't want Kyle Larson or anyone to win by 15 seconds in any stage. But that could happen at Homestead with Larson if he has his way. If he has
Riley
his way.
Riley just did it over this past weekend in the Xfinity Series race.
Yes, he did.
Almost 15 seconds he won that race. So, I mean, again, I think Larson has that Homestead down, and that team's starting to get locked in that, hey, these are the races that really matter. And we can position ourselves to say this is a test function for us, for Phoenix. But they're going to put the pressure on. They're not going to relax.
So let's briefly touch on Christopher Bell, because after the race on pit road, Bell told NBC he I'm sure he, you know, he was simply kind of just dejected that he just lost by 0.082 seconds. But the way he phrased his answer, I felt, was kind of revealing, where like he says that was our shot to get into the final four. It very much felt like he's saying that was as close as we're going to get, which is kind of surprising since right now he's minus 2 points out of the final four. That's how close it is right now. But he didn't sound like someone who felt very confident about their chances over the next two races, which, I mean, he has one win this year. It was on dirt. He has 9 top fives for the season, which isn't a bad number, but he has 6 poles, and none of those poles have resulted in wins.
I think the correct way. He was one lap away from winning this race.
He was.
He was one lap. If you needed that one more lap in order for you to get that race win, you know, he had that Hail Mary last year at Martinsville. And I think that's
not, not to be confused with the Hail Melon, which everyone remembers.
Yeah, he had the walk-off one, we'll put it that way. But again, it's one of those things with the walk-off, you have to be perfect. And Bell felt like he was perfect at Las Vegas to secure a win. And again, we made mention, less than a tenth away from locking himself into the playoffs. So I understand Christopher Bell's frustration, again, with his performance that he had. Finished 11th last year at Homestead, but you know, I think he might have a better shot at Martinsville. But it's just a lot easier to win it now, not have to worry about it, than try to stress about the other two races that are going on.
Do you think coming that close and not getting it the win, does that take the sails out of that team at all for these next two races?
Not necessarily. I think in the fact that this is, I don't want to say Christopher Bell is not a favorite to get in the championship four, but there's only four spots. And you've got a lot of competitive drivers that, you know, William Byron's been really competitive this year. Larson's already locked himself in. Denny Hamlin. He even got respectable drivers of like Tyler Reddick, Christopher Bell, trying to vie for those spots. It's a tough battle. So if to get that close and to not get locked in, I don't think it's a demoralization of the team. But it's just a frustration of, okay, we could have had it the easy way, gone into Phoenix prepared.
Okay, Jared. So the big, aside from Larson winning, the big news that came out of this race was the 24 hours in which we believed that Ryan Blaney's car had failed inspection of this race. Because not long afterwards, all the cars went through inspection, and then NASCAR dropped the bomb that Ryan Blaney's number 12 car had been disqualified because the left front shock didn't meet the overall specified length outlined in the NASCAR rulebook. Because of this, Blaney would have finished last in the race, would have had his stage points revoked, and as a result, would have been 56 points behind the cut line to get into the championship four. But then, just under 24, or actually, I think it was the next morning, NASCAR put out a new media alert saying, actually, what had happened was, after further review of the inspection process throughout the weekend's events at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, NASCAR has rescinded the number 12 disqualification penalty. Monday morning during its race weekend debrief, NASCAR discovered an issue with the damper template used for inspection. NASCAR then conducted a detailed investigation and has restored the number 12 stage and race finishing positions. From Sunday, NASCAR has taken internal steps to remedy this issue moving forward. So now going into this weekend's race at Homestead, Ryan Blaney, instead of being last on the playoff grid, he's now back to being seventh, minus 17. Rather than minus 56. So instead of being in an absolute, pretty much must-win scenario, Ryan Blaney's back to having a little bit of breathing room going into the final two races. So this was something we've, to my knowledge, never seen out of NASCAR. NASCAR penalizing a team, disqualifying a team, and then saying, actually, it was our mistake. Something was wrong.
It was NASCAR rescinding the penalty.
Yeah. We've never seen that before. We've seen stuff overturned through like appeals processes, but this is new. And it's kind of refreshing to say, hey, to see NASCAR saying, oops, our bad. Here are your points back. And I'm sure the 12 team's very, very happy right now.
You think? I mean, that's like I said, going from must win to trying to hit home runs and walk-offs to, hey, we can actually have a little bit of a race strategy in this makes sense. No, that's a tough thing of NASCAR saying, whoopsie, here's one of our playoff drivers. We penalized them, but actually we were at fault with this template. Usually they're pretty good with that standard of consistency and not having a mistake on their part. But yeah, I mean, if that, I don't know if it made it worse with rescinding it or just having it appealed up. But yeah, this makes Ryan Blaney's scenario like it was before, where he's not actually last and has to must win. He can actually point himself a little bit more into the playoffs than, you know, not have to worry about stage points, just go for the win and that's it.
So yeah, good for the team Penske, the number 12 team. I'm sure, especially after, you know, last year, with what happened with Blaney and fixing pit road, that team's looking for some redemption in that part, and having that extra weight on their shoulders wouldn't have helped, I'm sure. So congratulations, number 12 team, to now just being negative 17 going into Homestead. All right, so that's enough for what happened at Las Vegas. Let's move on to our news for the week. All right, so one of the worst kept secrets in the NASCAR world before last week was that Carson Hocevar was going to be driving the number 77 Chevrolet for Spire Motorsports in 2024. That news was made official last Wednesday, where the 20-year-old native of Michigan will indeed skip the Xfinity Series after a few years in the Truck Series and compete for Rookie of the Year honors next year, driving the number 77. So he has impressed this year in the Truck Series. He's even impressed in his very few starts in the Xfinity Series with Spire Motorsports. Spire Motorsports will now be a three-car team in the Cup Series, where Hocevar will join Corey LaJoy and also Zane Smith, who's out on loan from Trackhouse Racing. So, Jared, what do you think about being, you know, in your early 20s and jumping from Truck Series to Cup Series at this point in your career? I'm not sure about it. I do admit the Hocevar is very talented. He's very good at getting a lot out of your equipment, as we've seen with what he's done with Legacy Motor Club over the last few months in that 42 car. Doing stuff in that car that his predecessor, Noah Gregson, wasn't able to do. But he's going to be racing in a car that's even lower tier, the Legacy Motor Club. The argument can be made, hey, if you're in the Cup Series, hey, who cares? What, right? Do you think that maybe that Hocevar is maybe missing out a little bit by not having at least 1 year in Xfinity, or just like, oh, well.
This is the way to go.
Yeah.
This is the way to go. If you want to go to the Cup Series, because how similar the truck and the Cup Series cars drive now. Yeah. If it was 20 years ago, yes, the Busch Series cars back then are, you know, what is the Xfinity Series now? They're pretty similar to the Cup Series, but now with these next-gen cars being similar to the Truck Series, this is the way to go. I mean, we've seen the countless prospects come up. The one aforementioned, Noah Gregson. We've seen Chase Briscoe. We've seen Hemric. We've seen a lot of drivers who's had success in the, you know, Xfinity Series. AJ Allmendinger. They're not really translating well into the Cup Series. You know, they're like flat out dominating on Saturdays, and when they get to the Cup Series, they're kind of waffling around because they drive so different. So this is the way to go now with the prospect series of, you know what, if I want to go to the Cup Series, I got to go in the Truck Series, start there, and not worry about the Xfinity Series. Because of how different the Xfinity Series drives, now you're creating this timeline of, okay, we get comfortable with the Truck Series, then we're going to go to the Xfinity Series, which is a completely different car, drives completely differently with the grip levels and stuff. And then you go jump in the Cup Series, which is completely different than the Xfinity Series. You're not really progressing. And I mean, several other drivers have like agreed, like Sheldon Creed. He said when he made his Cup Series debut at Kansas that it's different than the Xfinity Series car. So this is not somewhere that, you know, 20 years ago that this makes sense that, hey, you go trucks, Xfinity, Cup. Now it's, you can go to trucks and then Cup Series and do decently well. And Hocevar has already proven that, whether it's with Spire Motorsports or Legacy Motor Club. I think that's where the success is going to lie in, is these drivers getting experience in the Truck Series and then jumping up to the Cup Series.
What about the age factor? What do you think about, 20, 21 year old, coming into the Cup Series? Because, the history of that, it's very checkered. For every Kyle Busch, you have like a Casey Atwood, or you have Joey Logano, who came in and did not impress over his first 4 years. What do you think Carson Hocevar can do, especially with the equipment he's going to be having with Spire Motorsports?
Well, I mean, you had Ty Gibbs jump up to the Cup Series last year, and he's young.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, the same age around Carson Hocevar.
Yeah.
He just turned 21.
And he didn't compete in the Truck Series.
No, he didn't compete in the Truck Series. So I think it's important wearing the fact that these drivers, they don't care. Like I said, this Xfinity Series, it doesn't make a difference. With the development, I think it's just having those reps in the Truck Series and the Cup Series. I think Hocevar has proven himself well, in that even in the quick span of a year, he's matured so much. He's been in those controversy headlines of involvement in Iraq with IRP, with Colby Howard, and then even this year at the Martinsville. Now all of a sudden he's matured, he's getting wins, and he's bringing himself up to the Cup Series, to the next level of Spire Motorsports, which has been making a pretty big investment into NASCAR.
All right, so moving on to our one other news item. So it was a big week for Kyle Larson. Kyle, in addition to winning on Sunday, he also clinched a Sprint Cup Series championship on Tuesday, one in which he owns. And then on Thursday, he was making his first ever laps in an Indy car at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where he, for his rookie orientation, were to get ready for next year's Indianapolis 500, and his first attempt at the double of competing in the Indianapolis 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 in the same day. And he was successful. He passed all of his requirements, so he's good to go for his first ever month of May next year. When I was at Charlotte last week attending the Roval, they had his cars there that he's going to be competing in next year. They had his Indy car, and then he has a stock car, letting people know, hey, this is coming. This is going to be happening next year. I'm excited for this, Jared. I'm excited to finally see, for the first time, because next year will mark 10 years since a Cup driver made that transition over to IndyCar to do the double, and that was Kurt Busch, which I got to cover. I got to cover the first leg of that when I covered the Indianapolis 500 as a grad student at the University of Indiana. On a scale of 1 to 10, Jared, what's your excitement meter show for right now for the double next year in Kyle Larson's first attempt after years? I lost count of how many times we would interview Kyle Larson at some media day or something, and we would ask him, okay, Kyle, when are you gonna do it? When are you gonna do the double? And he just hem and haw. It's like, oh, when I feel ready. And it's finally here. He's gonna do it next year. Well, what's your excitement level?
I think he's the fifth or sixth driver to do the double. And you mentioned Kurt Busch. I think
Tony Stewart, Robbie Gordon, John Andretti.
So I think that's going to be the fifth driver. I like the uniqueness of the aspect of, here's a driver going to compete in IndyCar in the morning here. Then he's going to make the trek from Indianapolis to Charlotte to see the second leg. I think it benefits in the fact that you already had this big IndyCar crowd. You can draw in those people into the Cup Series race. I've been a fan of those doubles too, with those drivers bringing into the other series. And I think Larson will do well in the fact where, he has a lot of racing experience, and anything you put him that has a steering wheel and wheels, he'll perform well in. So I think it's a good overall sense for the sport that we have somebody doing the double, and someone that can be competitive, arguably, definitely during the Coca-Cola 600, but even for the Indy 500, even though he's a rookie.
All right. So that's enough for news. Time to move on to our preview for the Cup Series race at Homestead Miami Speedway. It's time, Jared, for a very unique race name. Sunday's race at Homestead Miami Speedway, which can be seen at 1:30 p.m. Central on NBC is titled The Forever 400, presented by Mobile One. If you're wondering why is it called that? It's Mobile One's tribute to Kevin Harvick, as we go to the track where he won his one and only NASCAR Cup Series championship back in 2014. So
up in those digs as well too this weekend.
Say it again.
He's rolling up in those digs.
Same paint scheme. Yes. The Anheuser-Busch is also honoring that championship endeavor by bringing out the Budweiser paint scheme that Kevin Harvick won that title with. They unveiled that in a very sentimental, lengthy video, which you can find on Kevin Harvick's social media channels. So, yeah, it's going to be all things Kevin Harvick this weekend. Am I even recording? Okay, I am recording. I didn't remember if I was recording or not. Okay, good. Anyway. So, yes, so it'll be a throwback weekend of sorts down in South Florida for Kevin Harvick.
Which I'll be there.
You will be there. You'll be able to capture it while you're covering the weekend for FrontStretch.com. So before we get on into this race preview, in memory of Kevin Harvick, Jared, Kevin Harvick has made 22 starts at the 1.5-mile track in South Florida. How many times has he failed to finish outside the top 10, Jared?
Like, there's probably a couple handful of times they finish outside the time. And remember this, he even ran a race. He ran a couple races on the old configuration of Homestead Miami Speedway.
Okay. I don't remember when they actually reconfigured it.
2003. So for 2002 during that season, it was a lot flatter track. Think of more Indianapolis type of style track.
Yeah.
It's definitely changed years. But I'm going to go with outside the top 10. I'm going to go with four.
Close. Three. Five. In 22 starts, Kevin Harvick has only finished outside the top 10 three times. That's unbelievable. That is remarkable. He has like a 7.5 average finish, something like that. So just very, very impressive. And it really, which makes it surprising that he only has one win there in all that time. But yeah, he just won there once and he won it when it mattered most in 2014. So, but anyway, the Forever 400 presented by Mobile One, this race last year, as we've discussed,
this race,
Kyle Larson made this the worst intermediate race of the year. Just absolutely stinking at the show. He only technically won by 1.7 seconds, but that's only because there was like only a 17 lap green flag run to end that race last year. If there had been that, like as you mentioned earlier, he would have lapped the field at least twice.
And on pit road with Martin Truex Jr. that he spun to his pit stall.
Oh, yep. I remember that.
He was in front of Kyle Larson and he made his pit. I don't think he got over too soon enough and spun around pit road. And that Truex was seen to be somewhat close to Kyle Larson in that. But yeah, I mean, Kyle Larson with that short run is even to make it in his second lead. It's still impressive. But a lot of unique drivers that were even in that top five.
He led 199 of 267 laps. And I was wrong earlier. It was 1.2 seconds that he won by after a 17 lap green flag run. But yes, that top five, I was kind of baffled by this top five when I went back to look at it, Jared. Top five was Larson, Ross Chastain, AJ Allmendinger, Austin Dillon, and Brad Keselowski. That's just not.
I remember that with Ross Chastain and AJ Allmendinger were battling hard, and AJ Allmendinger thought that was fun as crap racing Chastain. I'm paraphrasing with that. With that battle, and Keselowski was even up there. He's finally scored a top five, so it was definitely a weird. If you take it between the lines of like, you know, especially kind of this season, you know, Chastain's not really been up there as he performed last year. Almendinger has been rumored to go back down to the Xfinity Series. Austin Dillon, and then Keselowski before the RFK Racing improvement. It was a very interesting top five.
Yeah, one I did not remember. So out of that top five, Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain, AJ Allmendinger, Austin Dillon, Brad Keselowski, only one of them is currently still in the playoffs, and that's Kyle Larson. So who do you are you taking to win the second round of eight race? Is it going to be the Kyle Larson sneaking up the show, winning each stage by 15 seconds?
Again, this is his type of track. You're on the high line, performed really well last year. He already won last weekend. He's got nothing to lose, so why not go with Larson? I know I'm batting with house money, but again, that's hard to compete with. And this was, again, the next gen era, which you would argue was he stunk it up. But even in these other tracks, you know, that similar type of tracks like Kansas-ish, you know, Pocono even, you could throw it in there that he's performed well. I mean, those sweepier type of tracks and, you know, faster tracks. So I'm going with Larson going back-to-back from the previous event and last year's event.
All right. I think based off how well Brad Keselowski showed up at Las Vegas, how well he finished there last year at Homestead when the team wasn't nearly where they are now, not even close. I want to pick that Brad Keselowski for the upset. The team's just, I'm sure they're going to be scrambling like heck to make sure Chris Buescher has the car this weekend. But I think Brad Keselowski, I think I want to take him. Upset win. Who, if you had to pick someone for an upset, Jared, who are you taking?
Oh, an upset win. Well, ironically,
is anybody that's not Kyle Larson an upset win right now under these circumstances?
Well, I'll take a little bit in the upset in the fact that this driver actually qualified in the top five last year, was not expected to drive in the car last year, and was announced that he's making his first start of the season, John Hunter Nemechek. 42 car at Legacy Motor Club, it's a mixed bag, but I think John Hunter Nemechek, this could be a good test. He qualified well. He spun out during the race back straight away. Finish didn't reflect that. He finished 27th, but
he was in the 23 car, correct? Because they were doing that
Bubba Wallace.
Yeah. So
he was in the 311 racing car, yes, for the 45 after Wallace got suspended at Las Vegas.
So right. So we didn't mention that in the news, but yes, Legacy Motor Club is getting some help from Toyota. Toyota is allowing their current driver, John Hunter Nemechek, to become a Chevrolet driver for one weekend to drive the 42 car for Legacy Motor Club, which I have to think this is Legacy Motor Club just wanting to kind of see what they'll be dealing with when it comes to Nemechek, just kind of a systems levels check.
Also, car is competing for a Truck Series championship. Yeah. This is their final race before the season finale. Josefar is a little bit more locked in. I believe he's plus 23. But again, I think you want all hands on deck for Josefar to make sure he's in the Truck Series playoffs before, you know, trying to do some Cup Series starts. So I think it's a part both can be, you know, more than one thing can be right. And I think that's both in this.
Well, when I thought about it, it's like, well, the truck race will be, you know, Friday. So he'll be like, or was it Saturday?
Saturday's a doubleheader.
Oh, okay. All right. So, but he'll be done with that before Sunday. So, I mean, like,
you still got to practice and qualify those cars. And I think it's just easier just have to be focused on the one garage area than trying to bounce around between those two garage areas.
Yeah, which I get. I understand it. But still, it is interesting to see this kind of manufacturer working together in this kind of capacity. Okay, you can have our driver for a week, Because sometimes you'll see that, like, under, you know, extreme emergency circumstances for a driver substitute. You don't see it like, oh, 5 days out, them announcing this, hey, Toyota driver's going to be in the Chevy car for a race. But I'm sure Jimmy Johnson
lines have gone.
Say that again.
It shows you how strict these manufacturer lines have gone.
Yeah, but I'm sure, you know, having Jimmy Johnson there in that leadership role allows for stuff like that to more easily happen. Grease the wheels. So, but yeah. It will be interesting to see what John Hunter Nemechek can do in that car after Carson Osibar is really impressed with what he's been able to do. I mean, he's had a couple, you know, DNFs here the last few weeks, but nothing that can be chalked up to driver error. So
they didn't. Legacy Motor Club didn't have a good weekend in Las Vegas. Both of their drivers had tire issues, so that's a weekend for them to forget.
Yeah. But I'm sure just overall they're just ready for their year to be over. So, but anyway, all right. So, yeah, I'm taking Brad Keselowski in the upset. You're taking John Hunter Nemechek in an upset. That'd be wild if John Hunter Nemechek stepped in that car and won. that'd be wild.
I mean, crazy things have happened. You saw Jamie McMurray won in his second career starts, spilling in for Sterling Marlin.
He did. All right. All right, that will do it for us this week on Dropping the Hammer. I'm Dan McFadden. You can follow me on Twitter, formerly known, or on X, formerly known as Twitter, whatever, at Dan McFadden. You can email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Jared, where can everybody find you? And where can they find you this weekend when you're at
Homestead? They can find me on the app X, formerly known as Twitter, as Daniel was trying to make mention, at Real Jared Haas. Pretty close to 900 followers, so excited. I will keep you updated with there what's happening in the garage area, and like I said, we'll get those interviews from Front Stretch with those drivers as well too. So,
weekend. Will you attempt to visit the beach this weekend?
I was actually last year. They had an infield beach bash with that lemonade company, Larry's Lemonade. And I got to see the beach there in the infield. So I already did that.
I mean, the real beach, Jared. Are you going to go visit, go see the ocean?
I've seen the ocean. I mean, I'm, like I said, the track will keep me pretty busy.
Okay. Or if not the ocean, go clubbing. Go find the hottest club in Miami or Homestead, if they have clubs at Homestead.
Football, how about that?
All right. So if you don't see Jared at the club, maybe you'll see him at the track. But yeah, check out his work at frontstretch.com this week. But we will be back here next weekend to recap the Forever 400 presented by Mobile One, and then to preview the round of eight finale and the final cutoff race in the playoffs at Martinsville Motor Speedway. I'm Dylan Fadden. Take care. We'll see you back here next week.